And so it was an interesting trip back through the dark in the floodwaters. Manuel, why don't you talk about your day on the edge of the Ninth Ward, which was equally in trouble.
All right. Just like James and Doug here, we left at about 1:30. It was when the trucks were dispatched and people were sent out to different areas to kind of see what we could see. At that time, some of our photographers have actually been out there. Ted Jackson, I believe. I'm not sure if Ted ever came in during the storm. But I was not the first reporter to reach the Lower Ninth. That was Ryan Teveno, one of our colleagues, also in the Pulitzer Prize-winning team. My mission was to try to get to San Bernard, and we knew that San Bernard had been flooding for most of the morning already and most of the afternoon because we were in contact through cell phones as long as they work, and then where they went out through internet, someone out there had a wireless connection that was working. And we knew that the water had started flowing into San Bernard around 7 in the morning and through the Lower Ninth at about the same time. So we had no pretense, so we really knew that it was flooded. In my mind, I pictured, I don't know, 3-4 feet of water, and that's what I thought we would find. We set out on the interstate, foolishly thinking we'll just take, you know, I-10, go to the east, and come on down on 510 by Jazzland and heading to the parish. And as far as we just got to the bottom of the Industrial Canal high rise, and that's where the water began. Actually, the water began as we were riding there. You could see that the parts of the French Quarter, Treme, were flooded. And, you know, we were blogging at that time, or the folks that have stayed downtown had a station where we were blogging, and furiously we were all trying to reach for our cell phones and call back and say we're flooded. Anyway, we went our way down to the quarter and took St. Claude, which was also had about 2.5 feet of water at the time, and worked our way to the levee, and that's how we were able to get to the St. Claude Bridge over the Industrial Canal. All through this route I'm talking to you about, there were probably 2 or 3 feet of water at the time. The closer you got to the levee, there were actually about three blocks from the levee, there was no water. That was the high ground. And then the farther you got away from the levee, the more you waded into water, and we were trying to not float our trucks, so we stayed close to the levee. When we got to the bridge, to the bottom of the bridge, the National Guard was there already, and they were already trucking some people out towards the dome. This was probably about, I don't know, maybe 4 o'clock. It took us about an hour and a half to get there, I believe. We lost kind of the sense of time. And there was a lot of people in that area, the bywater area, that had not evacuated, and they were fine in a sense that the same sense this woman in Lakeview was, they had survived. And they, we talked to a few of them, and they were like, we're going to work our way to the dome, and they'll evacuate us sometime tonight or tomorrow. That's what we all thought at the time. So we got our way to the bottom of the bridge, and on this side of the bridge, on the west side of the Industrial Canal, there was, like I say, about 3 feet of water at the most around that. And then we walked to the bridge and walked down the other side, and that's when it really hit us. All you could see was the very top of rooftops on the first houses on the other side on the Industrial Canal. And Brian Teveno, my colleague, and Ted Jackson, a photographer, had gotten there shortly before, we learned later this, and they have hooked up with a boat, just a private boat owner who had started rescuing people, and they had taken off. They eventually will work their way all the way through San Bernard, and that's how we will realize that first day that the flooding indeed was extensive all the way into the parish. I stay at the bridge with another reporter and another photographer, and we started talking to people as the SWAT team from NOPD was bringing them in, and also some private boat owners. We had another photographer there also who had been embedded with the SWAT team, and some of the pictures that you saw or that were published in that online edition are his too, as well as Ted's. And what I remember, it was very, very quiet. It was just a drizzle at the time. The rain was subsiding. It was still very cloudy. And in between the noise of the boats, there were probably about 3 or 4 boats working that area at the time. But when the boats will depart and the people will move to the trucks and the truck will depart towards the dome, it will just get real quiet, and all you could hear were people yelling, asking for help. I got children here, come get me, please. help, help. We couldn't see them from where we were, but we could just hear them. And it was probably one of the eeriest moments of that whole ordeal up to that point. I mean, it's the days after that got a little worse, or a lot worse for a lot of people. But I remember thinking at that time, at some point, well, at least we know this part of the city flooded, but the rest of the city, we thought, was okay. I had no idea what you guys were finding. We had no idea what other teams were finding. My thought was that the water had just come into that area through the industrial canal. There was obviously a bridge on the lower ninth. I figured some of it got toppled or top and flooded Treme and the bywater, but, you know, uptown and the rest of the city and Lakeview and Gentilly and most of the east will be fine. It wasn't until we returned late that night and heard what James and Doug have found that we really realized that we were in for it. Two anecdotes or two things I remember clearly from people we talked to. One of them made it into our story that Brian and I co-wrote a story about San Bernardino in the lower ninth for the next day's edition. It was this gentleman. He and his wife had remained at the house for the storm, and he had described to me how the water had risen, I mean, really quickly. He said there was some street flooding, which was normal during these kind of storms, and then all of a sudden, he said, in 25 minutes, his car went under. And then 40 minutes later, they had to go into the attic. And he didn't have a hatchet or any way to work himself out of the attic. So I forgot to ask him where he got it, but he got a knife, an 18-inch knife, a hunting knife. And he spent an hour and a half cutting through the plywood and the shingles of his house to basically dug himself and his wife out. And that's how he made it. And he said that the happiest time of his life was when they saw the first ray of sunlight through the hole. He said it was complete darkness. I mean, he had to like keep touching his wife to make sure she was still there. But then, you know, we're talking to this, and I'm talking to this man and his wife, and they're shivering, and they're, you know, and he's saying, "We're gonna be all right, though. We're gonna be all right." And I just don't know where he summoned that or where he found that. Been meaning to try to go find him. His house in the lower ninth has been by now demolished and wiped out. I don't have no idea where he is. I hope he is all right. But I have tried to keep that memory with me because this was not the first disaster I had covered up. I'm from overseas, from Nicaragua, and I did live through a civil war there and a small tsunami when I was already a reporter there. And I remember going back to visit those areas years after, and you just don't know ever something happened. Yeah. And you know, one day we will all drive around the city, and we will remember, these memories will stay with us, but we will remember those flooded, the water line, you know, the water line will slowly disappear, and we all will recover what we have lost, but it'll be a while. But just like that man said, I think we're gonna be all right.